Hello, friends. We're back on the air again. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle here in the United States. During the first hour, we had a really fascinating interview with Kiwani Lapsaritis, who's an expert in the Sasquatch, and he told about how Sasquatches often appear from the other dimensions. And I really enjoyed having him on, especially with his message for humanity. During this second hour, we'll be interviewing a really interesting fellow named Professor Nolan Higdon, who's with us, who's with the Censorship Project at Sonoma State College in California. He's currently in San Francisco. He's on the line. We'll be going to his interview in a few minutes. I'd like to give a little bit about his background, is that he's a professor of Latin American U.S. history in the San Francisco Bay Area. His academic work focuses on nationalism, propaganda, and critical media literacy education. He sits on the boards of the Media Freedom Foundation. He's contributed chapters to the Censored Project in 2013, 14, 15, and 16, as well as other books. He's an accomplished writer, and I'm just so happy to have him on the show today. I want to remind everyone that if you are in the Vancouver, British Columbia area, I will be the Master of Ceremonies for a wonderful Mind, Body, Spirit Expo in Vancouver from October 30th to November 1st. I'll be giving readings there. I'll also be giving several presentations, including a presentation on the Modal Peace Project. And if you are in the area, please stop by. Vancouver is a beautiful city, and it's only 2.5 hours from Seattle. For more information, please go to their website at www.bodysoulspiritexpo.com. I also need some help with some volunteers with my presentations in the event. So if you live in the Vancouver area, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me anytime on my toll-free number at 1-888-879-8339. Next month in November, I'll also be giving a series of presentations on UFOs and extraterrestrials in Tokyo, Nagoya, Kamakura, and Osaka, Japan from November 10th through the 14th. And for more information, please email event@jceti, that's jceti.org, or email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. With that, I'd like to bring on Professor Higdon. Hi, Nolan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for coming on today. How did you ever get interested in press censorship, of all topics to be interested in?
It actually came from my studies while I was getting my degrees in college. Uh-huh. I was interested in the sourcing. Being in history, historians rely on sources to draw interpretations and conclusions. And a lot of the sources they depended upon were in the press. Mm-hmm. And I had known the current director of Project Censored, Mickey Huff, as a professor. And he was talking about the reason why we need to sort of get these narratives right in the present is because historians will use them in the future as a foundation for their conclusions. Mm-hmm. And so I was interested in learning how to evaluate these sources as they emerge to kind of see, like, what narratives are constructed with the way press stories are done in the present, and then how that affects our understanding of the past, because we use these sources to sort of construct our own history. And if they're problematic in the present, that also makes our history have some serious problems. And I think, you know, academically speaking, there are a lot of problems with our shared narratives of history, at least in the United States.
Okay, wonderful. Well, you've come out with Professor Huff sent me a very interesting book. It was Censorship 2016. And he talks, you've got so many interesting stories in there. Of course, one of them is about Fukushima. It's pretty much disappeared from mainstream press, but the four reactors, as I understand it, are still spewing a highly radioactive water into the Sea of Japan and the Pacific Ocean. Could you tell me a little bit about your research into that area?
For sure. Yeah, we've been covering Fukushima really since the event happened. I mean, the corporate press at least mentioned this catastrophe when it initially emerged, but the fallout and the results since have really been dramatically undercovered, including its implications to other countries as well as mm-hmm. the environment, the oceans. This larger story of the impact of Fukushima has largely been ignored by the corporate press.
Right.
There are some independent journalists who are studying what the effects are of Fukushima, and we've had some great students and academics who have tried to bring light to the work that these different journalists are doing. But again, they're usually sort of silenced over the din of the corporate media coverage of these stories, which tend to have very little to do with what people care about. So Fukushima kind of gets tossed aside. And it's interesting that in the case of Fukushima, we're talking about these major like health disasters and fallouts and crisis, and it doesn't make corporate news, and it has implications for people here in the United States, not only in the consumer food items that are brought over from Japan, but as well as our oceans, the fish and different wildlife that come from the ocean, especially out in California, out here on the West Coast. This story is not mentioned in the corporate press, but independent journalists have been following this, and students as well, to kind of understand, you know, what is the impact on our shared environment.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'm very lucky, and we're very fortunate to have another radio talk show host who just stepped into the studio. Her name is Andrea Martin. As with me, she's a certified Hado instructor, and she's a Moto Peace Project a wonderful supporter. She just flew in from Paris. And in Paris, they had this one big story going on in France that absolutely nothing in the Seattle Times, none of the papers here, none of the American media has anything to do with it. So I wanted to just to bring her on just for a few minutes, and then we'll go on with your wonderful presentation, if that's okay, Nolan.
I'd love to hear from her.
I just want to introduce her. Andrea, how are you doing today?
Hey, Ted. I'm great. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, it's so nice to have you here. Please tell me about your experience in Paris, about the news story, which probably no Americans know about.
Yeah, no, this was actually a great deal of fun. I attended a science conference, a water conference, in Bulgaria, of all places, and was flying in the morning from Paris, but I was actually in Sofia, Bulgaria. And I had spent all day just, you know, hanging out and was exhausted in the evening, decided to hang out and just watch the local television. And I found several stations that had their local news in Bulgaria, but there was the BBC station in English. And so there were three or four stories that were running very frequently. There was a huge weather story in China. There was the flooding in the United States. But there was an Air France strike going on that had happened that day at Charles de Gaulle Airport. And during the strike, I guess over the last couple of years, they've been having cutbacks and layoffs, and it hasn't, you know, gone over real well. And during the strike, they actually had executives at Charles de Gaulle at a meeting and announced that they were going to have more cutbacks and more layoffs. And the crowd became somewhat violent, and I mean violent in a different way, is that several of the executives were attacked, but not their physical person. They had their shirts ripped off their backs, literally.
Amazing.
And the story was showing these executives running and being helped by security over the fence. And it ran every 10 to 15 minutes for several hours.
Wow.
Continuously. I saw this story maybe 20 times. They played it again and again in like a loop. It was just on every station that was showing news, there was the storm and then the French executives and the strike. So I came home. Nobody had heard of it. I had one Facebook friend, and that was it.
Well, Nolan, what do you think? Is that typical from your experience of stories being covered abroad and nothing is mentioned here?
Yeah, I mean, that's been, you know, par for the course in the United States for at least the last 30 years. It's part of like the corporatizing of the press that really picked up strong in the 70s and 80s. A lot of these corporate news organizations cut their overseas bureaus. But also, you know, a mass strike of workers or anybody who's from the working class tends to be either ignored by the corporate media, or if it is such a big movement and it's in like a media center like New York, like Occupy or Black Lives Matter. Sure. When it can't be ignored, they tend to attack it, that is trying to undermine the movement itself. Because, again, the last thing, you know, a corporate media outlet wants to do is give power to groups that are challenging corporate dominance. So they either ignore or attack these movements. That's traditionally been the case. They misrepresent them. Or if it's overseas, I mean, it's much easier to ignore for the corporate press. And unfortunately, that means for the American people.
I have to tell you this story. It was 1979, and I'd lived for the summer in London, going to law school there. And I was flying back in August, and the morning I was leaving London, I picked up a copy of the London Times, which I like to read. It was a big front page headline, U.S. government responsible for AIDS, or was created in a laboratory in some crazy military experiment that had gone wacky. Anyway, I bring the paper with me. I get back to Seattle. I fly into Seattle. I look at the Seattle Times. There's nothing. I turn on the locals' television stations. Nothing. I wait patiently for weeks. Nothing. Nothing comes up. And I don't know if it's true or not, but that was the sort of thing that, from my experience of things coming up, that you have no idea things are going on. And, you know, Fukushima was covered here when it first happened back in 2011. But now to pick up a copy of our local papers here, I don't want to single out just one paper because they're all the same in the television stations. There's nothing, no mention of it at all.
Yeah, well, the corporate media excuse generally is, look, we only have so much space in a newspaper, we only have so much time on television to cover things. We can't cover everything. Yeah. But the founder of Project Censored challenged that, and he said, well, look, if you have such limited time, how do you decide what to cover? You know, how is what you are covering more important than these stories we consider censored?
Sure.
And he created a news category called Junk Food News, and that's where we compare what the corporate media is covering to these stories they're not covering. And we tend to find that the corporate media covers stories that really aren't newsworthy or important to most people.
Sure.
But at the same time, there are these stories that are important to lots of people. Going on in the independent press.
Sure, absolutely. And then I think it includes good news, too, because there's so many good things happening on this planet that if you listen to television for any length of time or pick up your local paper, they don't devote enough time to the good news that's happening around the planet.
Yeah, actually, up where you're at, Sarah Van Gelder works with Yes Magazine. We work close with her, and she emphasizes mm-hmm. these good news, solutions-based stories.
Wonderful.
And every year she compiles them for Yes Magazine, and we're always just amazed by her list and thrilled with the work that's done by Yes Magazine.
Wonderful. Well, I'd love to invite her on the show sometime because she sounds like a wonderful person to have on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the preface to this censored book, there's a book that it was Professor Huff emailed me. This is a quote from Mark Crispin, an author, professor of media ecology at New York University. He writes, "Most journalists in the United States believe the press here is free." But he writes, "This is an illusion, and it only helped obscured by the fact that, but by and large, the U.S. corporate press does not report what's really going on while turning out." Or laughing off all that tried to do just that. Do you know I heard last year that the concentration of ownership in the corporate press, in the mass media in the United States, something like five or six corporations own 90 to 95% of all media here in the U.S. Are you familiar with those statistics?
Yeah, I've actually written extensively on that.
Okay.
Yeah, about six corporations own 90%
Amazing.
Of all of your print. Radio, television, media, and the internet, which was poised to be this like great savior, we've in fact found that the trends show that all people are doing is turning off these old mediums, but they're using the same six outlets, internet sites, or the news generated from those internet sites. So these six corporations still dominate even on the internet usage as well.
What a shame. Andrea has a question. Go ahead and ask if you like.
Hey, yeah, there. Thanks very much. I was wondering, is there an area of the world that has worse coverage that you think there's more censorship, or is there an area of the world that really you feel gets the word out fairly has fairly good coverage?
It's a great question that we often receive. I would argue that. The level or the amount of censorship, it's something you can't quantify. And, I would argue there are places in the world that are worse than the United States in some cases because they openly block access to Internet sites. But But there is there you could make a counter argument that it may even be worse in the U.S. because people think they have access to all the possible information.
Yes.
So at least people in, you know, say like China or Saudi Arabia seem to be pretty aware that they're locked into a box of censorship.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, most people seem pretty unaware of it. And this is true in Europe and other and European nations as well. So I would say it's a tough question to answer and quantify. At some level, mm-hmm. it has to come down to a value judgment.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. One of the there's so many different ways we can go with today's interview, but I'm just going over the book that Professor Huff sent me. The titles are Half of Global Wealth is Owned by 1% on the Planet. Let me see here. All Kinds of Arctic Warming Global Impacts. Millions in poverty get less media coverage than billionaires do. Costa Rica setting the standard on renewable energy. That's interesting. Could you tell me what Costa Rica is doing?
Sure. First, I did want to mention. So the book we're talking about is Censored 2016, and every year Project Censored comes out with a book.
Mm-hmm.
Where we try and highlight the work that independent journalists are doing to unearth stories that are ignored by the corporate press.
Sure.
And we do it with contributions from six continents of students, professors, and community members who nominate the stories, which are fact-checked, vetted. We put the top 25 in the list.
Mm-hmm.
We usually get about 300 to 400 stories nominated for the book, and unfortunately, we're only able to pick 25.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where these stories come from. In case the listeners are curious about that,
mm-hmm.
Costa Rica was able to move itself off its fossil fuel dependence starting by 2015.
Mm-hmm.
It was able to generate. Its electricity flow from using water and hydropower plants to generate its electricity. So it's moving itself off of fossil fuels. And the story is again important because kind of what you were talking about earlier. There are these good news stories, solutions to these large problems.
Mm-hmm.
Often, you know, if you watch many news broadcasts, independent and corporate and government, you sort of get like these tidbits of like depressing knowledge.
Right,
and you can find yourself thinking that these problems are impossible to solve, but these good news stories demonstrate that sometimes there are at least possible solutions or steps in the right direction toward a solution, and so I would say this is one of these examples that it is possible to move a society off its dependence on fossil fuels with some sort of planning and ingenuity and some sort of like forward thinking toward sustainability by a population, its leaders, and its people.
Well, people probably don't, many people here in the United States may not realize it, but Brazil, which is a huge country, a wonderful country, I have many listeners in Brazil, actually produces, I believe, they don't use petroleum products for running cars and vehicles. Instead, they use sugar cane to produce an ethanol substance that runs off many, many vehicles there.
Yeah, that was an example of taking what, you know, had generally been used by the consumer market
mm-hmm.
For these massive profits of consumer goods, but taking that like cash crop, you know, for centuries by that point, Brazil was able to take it and have it actually serve the population, right? Mm-hmm. This is doing a good for the population to give them cheap access to these energy sources.
Sure.
But yeah, again, another example of an inspiring story.
Well, here's another one. This is about genetically modified crops, and of course, USDA ignores critiques of new pesticide-resistant genetically modified crops. I know I did a story on this a couple of months ago, but that the monarch butterfly now is almost extinct here in the United States. It's a beautiful butterfly, and it's all thanks to genetically modified corn and crops made by Monsanto Corporation.
Yeah, this geoengineering of crops, you know, it's sort of left a lot of questions that go unanswered. You know, well, on the one hand, a lot of this sort of science is driven by creating more of something, usually to produce the market, to produce market value or expand market value of these crops.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of research done into the effects, and so we have these like independent, you know, sort of studies that show these outcomes that seem to have proof that there are these dangerous effects from geoengineering. The problem is a lot of the ways in which these crops are geoengineered remains hidden. So really close studies become impossible. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of becomes this like circular logic,
right,
where they say, look, you don't have studies to disprove or to prove what we're doing is harming people. But it's like, yeah, we can't get access to the studies because you're blocking them.
Right.
Yeah, but we do have these outcomes that question or at least point to some serious problems with geoengineering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. The impetus for today's show, by the way, I wanted to do a show like this for quite a while, Nolan, and I'm so glad you're on today. One of the things I also wanted to touch base on is the American Secret Space Program. I had a fellow on my show here last month named Corey Good, and he'd spent 20 years on Mars. I had another gentleman named Randy Kramer, another person who was with the American Secret Space Program, who also spent 20 years total on Mars and also on the dark side of the moon. And I contacted, last week I contacted the editors at both the New York Times in New York City as well as the Chicago Tribune in Chicago, and they actually refused to do any stories at all in the Secret Space Program, which is really unfortunate. I think that was one of the biggest stories of this century, but yet they refused to write anything about it.
Yeah, out of curiosity, so you said you contacted them, or did these individuals contact them?
I contacted them, and they refused. They've ignored me and won't write anything about it, period. I mean, it's not pleasant to write about the fact that there allegedly are 6 to 7 million people in slave-like labor conditions on the Mars planet, run by a group called the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate, the ICC, of which Boeing is a part, Microsoft is a part, and lots of other Earth-based companies are a part. And they produced high-tech gadgets for trade with extraterrestrials off of Mars. And while the rest of us here have a petroleum-based economy that's stuck back in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries, and I don't think it's right. I don't think it's fair to the people of this planet, especially when many of our tax dollars from the United States here was being used to fund these nefarious operations off-planet. But this is, I think, one of the biggest stories of this century, and it's being ignored by the corporate press, totally ignored. But it is getting it out slowly on the Internet, but it's there, you know.
These whistleblowers, were they able to take any government documents with them, like any classified documents?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure, but they can point to places where, if you go to, there's a base in Texas where Corey Good mentioned, Carson Air Force Base, where there are hidden access points within that base to a tunnel system that goes throughout the United States and around the world, and from there that there are portals to places off planet. He said that you can go as far as Saturn, for example. There is a base maintained out at Saturn, but that we're not told the whole truth about this. We're just kind of we're treated like children and it's time for this truth to become widely known. I can put you in touch with him if you like. I can do that. I'd be happy to do that.
Well, I'd be interested. I mean, for such a complex. For such a complex narrative, I would imagine we have to produce some government documents, right, to be able to prove this thing exists. I mean, I guess, like, you know, I wonder what he has beyond his word of mouth. Does he have any, like, inside documents to show others that know about this, or also how other scientists who are purporting to try and get grant funding to, like, go to Mars, are they covering up, like, something on Mars? Like, you know, and how are they being paid?
Where
do they come from?
I don't even know whether they use even money there, for that matter. But it's a tremendous story. It's been running actually on Gaiam TV, GAIAM. They've had a weekly interview with Corey Good now going for the last couple of months. He said that the Secrets program has technology that's thousands of years ahead of us here on the planet. And it's time for people to know about it. And one person that I'll be bringing on in a few minutes, Nolan, is Scott Lemriel. He's had face-to-face and telepathic contact with what's called the Galactic Alliance for the past 54 years. The Galactic Alliance is an alliance of 435 million planets in this one-third of the Milky Way galaxy. They're comprised of approximately 7 trillion entities, mostly human, all benevolent, who care deeply about us. They are between 50 and 100,000 years ahead of us technologically and 30 to 50,000 years ahead of us spiritually. And he's put them in contact with me as well. I've been in telepathic contact. I'm a psychic myself. So, and what he has to say, I'm sure he'll be very interesting on how and why the media is the way it is.
I'm kind of interested with, like, those giant facts. Like, are those giant claims backed up by, like, any facts with, like, data? Like, you know, where do these numbers come from? Like, who's accounting mm-hmm. for them? How do you know them? Like, you know, those
sure.
are some, like, major. I'm sure that's also a problem you run into with both corporate or independent journalists. Is
sure.
You know, what is your evidence base for these, like, giant claims?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. Those are wonderful questions, and you can ask them yourself here when we get Scott on. Real quick, there's so many things to talk about, Nolan, in your wonderful work, and I want to support you guys as much as I can. You have a program here called a title called Global Killing of Environmentalists Rises Dramatically. Do you know much about that topic?
Yeah. This has been sort of, you know, a long-standing issue. You know, these environmentalists who tend to be, you know, supportive of a planet unanimously run, like, you know, in egalitarian fashion, both for humans and all living species,
mm-hmm.
Have been branded with this term eco-terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, this fits into the military bellicose rhetoric mm-hmm. of being able to attack these groups. And increasingly what we've seen is this hyperbole around environmentalists has led to these basically like state assassinations or killings of these groups, mm-hmm. Members of these environmentalist groups, mm-hmm. and it's been on the rise. I would say it fits, you know, as the environmental movement is sort of growing at the same time, you're also seeing more of these killings.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem to be like a state repression of mm-hmm. this very unified movement against, what do you call it, protecting and sustaining the environment for human existence on Earth.
Wow. What governments have been responsible for eliminating environmentalists?
We see this on continents. Around the world. Unfortunately, a lot of it is done in secret. Mm-hmm. We do know, your question is actually interesting because it begs the question of, like, what level of involvement do you have to have to be considered a country involved in these killings, right? So what about, mm-hmm. like, the spying of these groups? What about attacking their rhetoric? So countries, both in, like, Africa and Asia, Central South America, the United States, mm-hmm. Have been at some level responsible for killings on these continents.
Interesting. Well, there's a lot of things that that go behind the scenes with many governments that we have no idea what's going on. So,
yeah, there's been at least 74 countries implicated.
Wow, that's
in these
incredible.
As well.
That's incredible. Well, with that, I'd like to bring on for a few minutes, Nolan, with your, if it's all right, my friend Scott Lemriel. Scott's been in contact with the Galactic Alliance for many decades, and I think he'll have an interesting perspective on press censorship and perhaps Fukushima as well. Scott, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
This is Professor Nolan Higdon from San Francisco. He works with Project Censorship at Sonoma State University. They publish an annual wonderful book on press censorship here in the United States. I also have my friend Andrea Martin, who's a radio talk show host as well. She just flew back from Paris, where there was a story there she related, which is Big Nose in Paris and nothing here in the United States. And I was wondering if you could give us your perspective on press censorship here in the U.S. and perhaps on Fukushima.
Yeah. Hi, Nolan.
How are you doing?
Good. I was listening to some of the show and your interesting talk about press censorship. And I guess Ted asked me to come on, maybe give a little different perspective or a little bit more perspective about where the source is coming from for this worldwide censorship and what the actual purpose for it is. In my experience that goes back into my early childhood, in first, and I wasn't looking for this back then, starting at five, I wasn't looking for this kind of experience, but I had direct contact experiences with, unfortunately in my case, benevolent beings from other worlds that are human. They aren't all, and many are benevolent that are bipedal, that are non-human. And there's a few tyrant races out there, and when you look at the condition of our planet, the fact that things are classified, or basically that people are being lied to worldwide under a classified system, you know, common sense tells you that the influences on this planet really that create these suppressions are not really native to here. Most people have been kept from knowing the true history of our planet and our solar system and our place in the universe by a tyrant control mechanism that implants terrorizing images in the subconscious of people. This is the electromagnetic field around the body. So when you look out through your eyes through this field, when you try to discover some of your higher faculties to know truth with certainty, doubts and fears play into this because they play on the nervous system with the vision and sound occluded so that you just feel the terror. Most people are, this is subconscious, and most people are not aware this was done to them. There, a process is underway now, off-world, amongst many benevolent races for the first time in galactic history to bring about a benevolent transformation for this planet. People are going to be starting to see more signs of this in the next few months and years to come. The purpose for this suppression started back under Eisenhower's term and before him under Truman's term when they created the National Security Act. When that was brought into existence, it basically put the Supreme Court off the shelf as a balancing power in government because they're not allowed to look into classified matters. That influence of classifying things was imported here from other worlds, and it began long ago on this planet, happened in Nazi Germany with their scientists, and was brought here into the Soviet Union with their scientists after the war. A treaty was arranged with an off-world group, a totalitarian group, to get an exchange of limited extraterrestrial technology in our former struggle with the Soviet Union. The same kind of treaty was signed with them at the same time. They played one against the other, and that's how we got to where we are today. In the Fukushima area, a lot of people don't know this, but if you think about it, all four power plants were allowed to explode the nuclear rods right into the air. Most people saw this on TV. That nuclear accident was 100 times worse than Chernobyl, which killed millions. And two cities in Russia, in that area, you can't even get near them. They're quarantined. So when you think about it, the radiation that was released from the Fukushima accident should have killed everybody in Japan, most of Russia and China, part of the Western United States, and it didn't.
Scott, forgive me for interrupting. Did your cat have something to say, by the way? Something important?
Yeah, he just came in, and he always seems to want to have something to say in every conversation.
His timing
is uncanny.
Well, I think
put him out, and he pushed the door open.
I think cats and dogs are highly intelligent. Obviously, if he has something to say, just go ahead and bring him on. That's fine.
Well, he's just trying to confirm what I'm sharing with Nolan and you.
Okay.
Most people are kept in the dark from the major news media. Nolan knows this. You know this, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
And that process partially is done through the satellite system around this planet, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Currently underway is a benevolent neutralization of these kinds of things. And nobody needs to take my word for it. I don't ask them to. When I do presentations, either on radio or in major conferences around the world, I share with people how they can access deliberately hidden truth in a safe way. That's the reason I do what I do now, why I publish the books I do. But anyway, when you think about Fukushima, the kinds of radiation that were released into the air and into the water and into the ocean should have done incredibly more damage than it's done, which means something is neutralizing, consistently neutralizing, the diabolical plans of tyrants to eliminate a sizable portion of the population on this planet. And this is some of the stuff, as you know, Ted, when you did some testing of waters off of the Washington coast.
Right.
There was, I think, 60 rads and growing of radiation coming ashore in the atmosphere.
There was a huge radioactive plume, and I'm sure, Nolan, you and your friends probably knew, I'm sure you knew about this, that after Fukushima, there was a huge plume of radiation coming from Fukushima headed directly to the West Coast, bullseye Seattle, and so containing 10 times more radiation than all the bombs dropped since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So I went out and did water samples in May of last year, and I found...
And I saw those samples.
Yeah, you saw those samples, and Nolan, everything, all the radiation was gone. So I said, well, what happened to all this radiation? Then Governor Brown of governor there in Sacramento, Governor Brown, to his credit, issued a press release saying that all the radiation, they couldn't find any radiation off the coast of California, but that story was only covered in California and not outside of the borders. Nothing was mentioned in the corporate press about it. But go ahead, Scott.
Interesting that it could be announced by Governor Brown.
I saw it on the news, but it was
never spread across the United States.
Go ahead,
Nolan. There are some competing narratives there, too. I mean, the corporate press is like basically, you know, almost unanimously agreed that this was just a problem for Japan. But there have been independent journalists who have had opposite reports. They have said that there have been radiation levels shown up the coast of California. But Brown's kind of predictions fit into the corporate narrative. That's not to say it's false at all, or to say these independent journalists are correct, but there are some competing narratives. I would also say that despite the radiation level, I mean, back to your original point about this this question of this galactic agency, I was kind of getting into this earlier. Now, I want to preface this. I want to give this question some context, but I'm sort of wondering what evidence exists for some of these claims that this is what's behind media censorship. And again, the context I'll say is I wonder that because, yeah, there's a fear that it'll sort of, you know, be like religion where, you know, people like talk to feelings and then have evidence, but they, you know, they fill in that void. They claim they hear a certain thing, and that could be problematic because there could be like other, you know, there could be like other relevant theories for things that people are making up that sound equally as sort of out there. But because they're bunched with these other theories that are out there, then people don't believe these ones that are evidence-based. And we at Project Censor sort of emphasize that you need to have evidence for your claims. That's pretty much the only thing we can have in like interaction to come to some agreement. So I'm just sort of wondering, you know, I got into this earlier, like what kind of evidence exists for this government involvement? Is there like government documents or anything beyond individuals' claims?
Well, if I could answer that, Ted?
Yes, please go right ahead, Scott.
Yeah, Nolan, do I call you Nolan or Dr. Nolan or what do you like to be called?
Nolan's fine. We'll go with that.
Okay, Nolan, no. This is obviously a question most people on Earth are going to ask about this kind of material. But remember this. Anything that's classified for whatever reason they wish under the National Security Act becomes a national security issue. And if they want to put a clamp on the evidence you want to see, you are not going to see it under any circumstance, as long as that classification system exists. That's number one. That's common sense. Number two, when you're dealing with the extraterrestrial issue, benevolent in my case, for the welfare of you and your family and this planet, it's most important to me personally that people have direct awakening or the ability to recover their own capability to see into the universe, which all human beings have when it's liberated, and to know truth for themselves. In other words, they begin to have their own direct experience. And there's nothing, I think you'll agree with this, Nolan, there's nothing short of your own experience when discovering truth, whether it's hidden, whether it's an illusion, whether it's made up, whether it's real. So I endeavor to share with people how they can go about awakening this, because to try to find it in a classified world system as we have now here, you are going to run into brick walls. You're not going to get through to find that evidence unless you can get out of your body, unless you can go generally at night when your body's asleep, unless you can get off-world with friends on a benevolent craft and look at this world from their perspective from outside yourself. You're going to be in the dark down here asking these questions. And rightly so, because where are you going to find the evidence? It's not going to be laid out on Coast to Coast AM or on Ted's program or in a scientific journal somewhere, because there are two levels of scientists on this planet. Those that are highly classified that know what's going on with the extraterrestrial issue to a great degree, and those that are in the mainstream intellectual area and in universities teaching that have studied well and have PhDs who are not classified. And they are as in the dark as everyone else. That's the problem as far as finding evidence. So what I endeavor to do, and I know this well, what I endeavor to do is to share with people very ancient techniques that beings from other worlds use to keep from ever acquiring a subconscious mind. Now, that's a big statement. Human beings in a normal state, not on this planet, do not have subconscious minds at all. We're not meant to have them. Because anything that's subconscious, if you use a low enough frequency, you can use it as a carrier wave to implant holographic images in there, in your field of energy, without you knowing it, you don't feel it, that can influence and directly control people from discovering and knowing anything with certainty. Right now, people remain in doubt, uncertainty, speculation, and theory. And that's okay to start out, but it's not a good place to end up. I hope that kind of answers that from my perspective.
Yeah, there's some part. I would counter some of that, but I mean, classified documents have been released, right? If you look at, like, Daniel Ellsberg or Snowden or Manning. But, you know, I also wonder if, you know, by your own admission, these documents are classified and we'll never get access to them. You know, how do we know that the government is aware of and dealing with these extraterrestrials? And I also, you know, to an earlier comment, too, I thought was kind of interesting is you know, this idea that these, whatever, aliens or separate beings care about the people on Earth. I find that kind of, like, shocking, too. You know, with the humans being sort of this species full of racism and sexism, they've destroyed this planet for their own existence. It's kind of funny, of all the species,
directly,
this would be one they choose. But go ahead.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Scott.
There was a treaty. You won't know about this. It's classified, too, not by the governments on this planet. There's two levels of government here, Nolan. I think you know this inherently. You know it or suspect it. There is the elected official government system in each country. And some governments are totalitarian. They're not elected. But in the Western world, for many countries, they are. You have elected officials, like a president of the United States. It's in for 4 or 8 years tops, and he's gone. And those people are busy after their first term working two of their last 4 years, you know, of their last 2 years in the first term, just getting ready to compete to get reelected. You cannot run a classified system of reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology and weaponry or space travel in a system that has its leaders in for such a small amount of time. So after World War II, they created a secret non-elected government that could survive a nuclear holocaust. That's where it started. And that got put under the classified system so that that government, which is not your elected officials, can continue to run a consistent space program, a classified, separate, parallel, secret space program, and they can consistently to run these black op projects through all of the military-industrial complex corporations, all classified, and make it consistent. This was especially important during the beginning of the Cold War with the Soviet Union when they realized they needed to have some kind of way to compete consistently. That's where it started. There is two treaties. There's an off-world treaty amongst extraterrestrial races between mostly benevolent and a few tyrant races that are spacefaring, dealing with this planet, particularly this planet, which doesn't allow any one race to dominate it, good or bad, but they've been allowed to have bases here in secret for scientific, historical documentation and things like this. Tyrant races like to experiment in illegal ways, just breaking treaties just short of going to war. And there's been a Cold War going on outside this planet that's affected this planet for a very long time. Earth's kind of a unique planet. The poles of this planet flip overnight every 100,000 years, just like clockwork. There's been six ice ages here, 600,000 years. Scientists think they know what that's about, but they don't. This goes back millions of years, 50 million plus years since the dinosaurs were extinct. Beings have been coming here in one form or another. There's an off-world treaty that's not worth the paper it's written on. It's been broken too many times by tyrant races infiltrating here secretly, and all of that's been recorded and monitored, and it's all coming to a head. And then you have a government of elected people on the planet, and then you have a secret classified government worldwide. These things are current. They're not futuristic. when you think about how this started after World War II, a lot of things start to fall into place about how we got where we are now. But all of this is influenced one way or another by benevolent and malevolent extraterrestrial races on this planet. This is the only planet I know of that flipped its poles, destroying the surface. At that time, tyrant races leave humans they brought here as slaves for mining in very small colonies like Sumeria or Egypt or other places that were tyrant cultures. They leave them behind with shut-down genomes on their DNA, implanted to procreate, and live maybe 100 years when a normal human being is meant to live 1,000 years. They are telepathic and they have photographic memories. Earth's human beings have been shut down in this regard. That is all about to change. That's why I do what I do now, to help people come into an understanding that they once knew this stuff, and it was taken from them without their consent or awareness.
Yeah, I understand that, but again, you speak with such certainty. If these things are so secret, I don't understand how you know them or how you prove them.
Well,
you've given me like a narrative.
I can tell you how I do. I mean, I can tell you how I found out about this stuff and how I explore it and what I do daily. As I mentioned, in my childhood, I had been contacted, and probably this has to do with lives I've lived in other worlds before I was brought here. It maybe has to do with a lot of things, but I was contacted and then developed over 30, 40 years silently, quietly. I never told anybody, not even my parents, what was going on until I published the Saviors Agenda a few years ago. So I'm 65 now, and it took a long time to prepare to do what I'm doing. And most importantly, the reason it's being done now is because something has changed in the consciousness of those races off-world. They have a new tool or new tools now they did not have to benevolently neutralize implants in tyrant extraterrestrial races that cause them and drive them to behave like they do. And that's filtered all the way down to Earth. All of that kind of thing is reversible. And the reason I speak with confidence is because of my experience with them and getting a perspective like they view this Earth from outside. I've been able to leave my body for one thing. This is one side of it since I was very young. And explore. And most, you know, human beings have this ability. But when they go to bed at night and come back in the morning and dream, sometimes they remember dreams, some people don't. When they do, they think this is fantasy. It's not. The pineal gland secretes melatonin and serotonin. These actually work to keep the body running on automatic, heart going, blood pumping, breathing while you're gone. That's why if someone's in a deep sleep, you can't wake them up. When you wake them up, they actually come back to the body. One of the first things you do to trap people is occlude their ability to remember where they go. That's one of the first things. All of that's recoverable because you, Nolan, Ted, myself, other people on this planet once knew this stuff. They once knew it. It's frustrating for people to find out at one point that they knew this and that it was taken from them deliberately. And then from that point begins the process of awakening all that. And as far as proof goes, the only thing I can share with you and anyone else is ways to access this and have a protected way of doing it. And when I state that, I mean that the way that I reveal to people provides a protection that is uncanny. You have to experience it to know it for yourself.
One thing I'd like to say, Nolan, the title of my show, of course, is called Out of This World Radio. So we go to subjects that other places don't go. One of the things, I'm a psychic myself. I've had about 21 years with experience on the other contacting spirits on the other side, including being in touch with some off-planet benevolent entities for the past year with Scott's help, year and a half. And the proof's in the pudding. I've had it so many times, messages given to me that turned out to be totally accurate. But it's each person's experiential, how it works. And I want to tell you that you and your friends are doing such a good service to humanity by pinpointing stories that otherwise just get lost in the media. We don't even hear about this.
Oh, I concur.
You know, you're doing such good work. And Nolan, if my listeners around the world wanted to order copies of your 2016 edition of Project Censorship, how would they do that, or what website do they go to?
Yeah, they could go to projectcensored.org. Projectcensored.org has offers them the opportunity to order the book and look at some of the other publications online. Our new copy is Censored 2016. We do an annual copy. We still measure our years in relation to the sun.
Okay.
And our 2016 copy is available now.
Wonderful. And then can people make a donation to your wonderful group as well through that website?
Absolutely. Yeah, they can donate online, and all the information on how to do it through PayPal is there online.
Well, that's...
And I take it your organization is kind of a nonprofit structure, Nolan?
Absolutely. We've spent our nearly 40-year history angering people all over the philosophical and political spectrum, so we take our money from small donors. That's who we owe our work to. We don't owe it to any corporation or private foundation.
Well,
Now that I'm aware of you, I've got to explore your website.
Yeah, and I urge everyone to do the same. Could you please repeat that website so people know how to get a hold of you, Nolan?
Sure. Projectcensored.org.
Got it.
And Projectcensored.org is a part of the Media Freedom Foundation. That's our nonprofit umbrella, and we'd love to see you online, and we look forward to hearing from all of you.
Okay, wonderful. And one of the stories, of course, Scott touched a little bit about it. I don't know if your organization's been able to cover it or not, but of course is the 1954 illegal treaty that was secretly negotiated by President Dwight D. Eisenhower, that in exchange for some extraterrestrial technology to fight the Soviets, that one negative alien group was allowed to abduct humans and study us. And since that time, they've done a lot of damage to the planet and to human society as well, but you see, the power is in the secrecy. They don't tell. Of course, it's hard to find information about this. But I had a lady on my show last year, Laura Eisenhower, who's the niece of President Eisenhower.
Granddaughter.
Thank you, Scott. And she had a very interesting things to talk about how our government negotiated this treaty, and it's been a treaty in place ever since. And I think the secret space program, which I mentioned earlier, that technology actually sprang from this illegal alliance and exchange between our civilization and these negative entities.
Yeah, Nolan, you'd want to know about that kind of suppression, because that goes a bit beyond GMOs and everything else.
Yeah. But
again, I go back to the interest in these topics, but I think our models are very different. And Project Censored is very tangible, evidence based.
I've got to look at your website.
Outer body experiences aren't used for what we report on.
No, I don't think so.
Sure,
that's all right. We have other people to do that kind of work.
Yeah, but Nolan, you guys are doing such good work, and I want to support you guys as much as I can, because you're doing the job in our country that needs to be done, of letting people know of the stories that don't get the attention that they should. Like my Andrea here, who's in the studio, just came from Paris. Big story over there about Air France executives, their shirts getting ripped off by protesters because they want to eviscerate the employee benefits. That's not covered here in the United States. Nothing. When I was in London in 1979, the big story, the front page story of the London Times about how AIDS was allegedly, I don't know if it's true or not, but allegedly concocted in a U.S. military laboratory. That never made mass media in the U.S. And it's funny because I was in London one day, flew back to the U.S., came here to Seattle, nothing in the papers. And I thought that was a major story. And I'm sure there's many major stories like that you just don't hear about.
Yeah, that's one of our biggest problems, is there are so many stories that they can't possibly fit in one book. The Internet's been a savior in that regard. We have an ability to post a lot at projectcensored.org for people to access.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we're getting short on time. We've got about a minute left. I want to thank everyone for listening today, both to our first hour with the Sasquatch Fellow. He was so interesting. And then again, Nolan, I appreciate you coming on today. Andrea, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thanks, Ted.
And Scott, for coming on. We've got about 30 seconds left, and Scott and Nolan, I'd love to give you the rest of the time, and Nolan to say whatever you like to wrap up today's interview.
Yeah, just like I said, thank you very much for the opportunity to come in and converse with you all, and I really appreciated the sharing of time and the opportunity to publish the work we do and hear about what you guys are doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. You're doing wonderful work. And Scott, we got about 10 seconds left.
Just wanted to wish everybody the very best for a bright, changing destiny for this planet.
Wonderful. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and we'll be coming back with some more Out of the World programs 1 week from today. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.